You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. The Hat Man. The Old Hag. The Lurker. The Creeper. Shadowy entities lurking in bedrooms and homes. People all across the world report interactions at night with unwanted visitors when we are at our most vulnerable as we sleep in our beds. What are these entities? Why do they visit some people and not others? Of those that receive a visitation, these dark shapes often leave the recipients upset, confused, and frightened. Yet are all the interactions negative? It seems not. Mike Ricksecker joins me on this week's Mysteries and Monsters, and having investigated plenty of cases, as he attempts to try and shine a light on this mysterious phenomenon and what they could possibly be. Are they disembodied spirits, ghosts revisiting loved ones, astral projections, or even interdimensional beings? Mike's new book, A Walk in the Shadows, A Complete Guide to Shadow People, looks into the various entities that people from around the world have had encounters with. From the Hat Man, entities with glowing eyes, shadow people, the lurkers, the crawlers, and even a terrifying event with a ghostly wolf. Mike covers all these and more in a conversation that will probably mean you'll sleep with the light on for the rest of the week. It's a big thank you for Mike to taking us into this uncharted territory for the show. Our Patreon is now live with bonus content, early release of the regular show, articles, and monthly prizes for everyone who signs up. You can sign up through the show notes for just $4 a month. Our latest episode with Stu Neville is on there, and there'll be an extra special episode dropping at the beginning of November talking about death by cryptids. Don't forget, you can also get your support by visiting our merchandise shop on Redbubble, and the link's also in the show notes. You can join us across all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can email us at mysteriesandmonsters@gmail.com with any feedback, guest suggestions, or if you'd like to appear. All artwork is by Dean Bestall. The show was produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is a part of the Straight Up Strange network. Now, let's take on the mysterious, shadowy entities troubling people across the world with Mike Ricksecker. One subject I've been asked to cover more than most is the disturbing subject of shadow people. This mysterious phenomena seems to affect all kinds of people from around the world, and I'm delighted to be joined by author, investigator, and ghostorian Mike Ricksecker to discuss this enigmatic puzzle. Mike, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. How are we?
I'm doing pretty well, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Mike. Now, you're someone whose work I have been well aware of for quite a while. I think the last time I saw you, you were discussing on television the strange and wonderful weird things that go on in Alaska.
Yes.
But shadow people is a subject that I've been asked to cover for a few times by my listeners, so I'm delighted to finally get you on the show and have this subject up front and centre. It seems to me, Mike, that shadow people seems to be one of these paranormal phenomenons that seems to have really picked up speed over the last sort of 10 years or so. And as someone with your experience in the paranormal and investigations and ghostly goings on, how did you kind of find yourself gravitating towards this subject, and what is it that attracted you to it?
Yeah, you know, shadow people have been with us for a long time, but you're right. This phenomenon has really picked up in popularity lately. But for me, you know, my first experiences with shadow people go all the way back to when I was very young, when I was about 8 years old. And I woke up in the middle of the night and there was this, what we call a shadow person, standing in the corner of my room. Of course, I had no idea at the time that that's what you call it. Mm. I just thought, you know, it's a tall, dark figure. It was an intruder and, you know, it was about to kill me, because that's about what you think at that age.
Yes.
You know, I figured I had about enough time to gasp and I was going to be a goner. But, you know, that's not what happened. I'm alive to tell the tale, thankfully. So what it did do was something very unusual that's a little bit different than most of the other shadow people stories that I get, although I do get other stories of physical interactions. And this one did physically interact with me. It approached my bed, leaned over. I'm trying to scream. Nothing's come out of my mouth. It grabbed me by the wrists, crossed my arms across my body, and it ran off down the hall. And I turned my head, and I watched it go into a closet. I have no idea why it went into the hallway closet, but it did. I finally found my voice, found my legs, ran off to my parents' bedroom, and, you know, screaming to them about what happened. Of course, you know, being, you know, nice, kind parents that they were, you know, they tried to tell me and tried to console me that, no, this was just a bad dream. And, but, you know, I was awake for this whole thing. I know that this absolutely did happen. And so that was my first experience. Of course, very frightening for an 8 year old.
Mm.
I did have a second experience, with a shadow person when I was 13, and we were moving from a house in Massachusetts to a house in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the new house. I'm just unpacking boxes, putting things away and all that. And I kept seeing this shadow standing in my doorway, or this figure. And I'd turn and I'd, you know, look at it, and it would, you know, take off. It would dart away. And that's when I would notice it was kind of, you know, a shadowy figure. And this happened several times, just putting things away, opening boxes, and I'd stand there and watch. And I'd turn, look, and it would take off. So I ended up asking my mother about it, you know, and asking her if she had also seen what was going on, if she had seen this figure. And I guess, you know, now that I was about 5 years older, maybe she thought I was a little bit more responsible or could handle some real information or what have you. And she said that, yes, she had actually seen this, which was great for me. And it was an affirmation of what I had seen. And, you know, it helped me to not worry about it. And it also helped me to realize that I wasn't crazy. You know, other people in the house were seeing this. So, you know, with that really diffused by her, I started getting playful with it. I started calling it Tom, like Peeping Tom. And so every time I'd see the thing, hey, Tom, how you doing? And it'd take off down the hall. So that went on for about 3 or 4 months. And then the activity just kind of suddenly stopped happening. So I don't know if it was just something that was there in the house, deemed that we were okay as a family, and then went about its merry way. No idea. I lived in that house for 5 years, and that was, you know, the most significant thing that I experienced that whole time. So I can never really call it a haunted house. And my parents lived there for a couple more years after that, and they didn't really report anything else. So, yeah, it wasn't really a haunted house, but it was certainly an interesting phenomenon. So that was really, you know, my first two significant shadow people experiences. And then as a paranormal investigator later on, I certainly started seeing more and more shadows on investigations.
It is intriguing for me, because I think one of the key aspects about the whole shadow people phenomenon is that there seems to be a variety of experiences that different people have, Mike. I mean, most commonly, it seems at the moment a lot of people tend to focus on what has become known as the Hat Man.
Right.
But for someone like me who's got a love of the paranormal, there's also a lot of parallels with what I suppose is still called the hag phenomenon, where mm-hmm. people, especially in European culture, have a tendency to have an experience of an old woman either around their bed or on their bed. And yet we can look into sort of Asian culture and African culture, and that still seems to apply in there. So in regards to the shadow person phenomenon, Mike, how many kind of clear sort of individual phenomenon do we think we're talking about here? Because there's clearly more than one type that seems to be afflicting people.
Yeah, there's definitely more than one type, and that's something that's really become confusing for a lot of people. You know, trying to describe this phenomenon, people that are experiencing this phenomenon, and you know, there are a lot of people that try to compartmentalize shadow people as just one particular thing. And really, these are a variety of different things that take a number of different forms that just happen to come off as a shadowy nature. And so, you know, some of these are just their regular human spirits. They're somebody's Aunt Jane, and, you know, they're just visiting or dropping in or whatever. They're just a human spirit phenomenon that can't fully manifest as an apparition. They end up coming off as a shadow. Those are a lot of these. But then, you know, you mentioned the Hat Man. That's one. There's the hooded figure. You mentioned the old hag. There's the crawler. There's different wisps and mists and black clouds and rolling black smoke and a lot of this, you know, different sort of phenomenon that, you know, they have aspects of themselves that are all related to each other, but there's also things that are very different. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, the old hag and how cultures from around the world are essentially describing the same thing. And that's been part of my research, is that, you know, for millennia, different cultures from all over the world have been reporting this type of phenomena that is related to shadow person phenomena. And while whatever they called it may have been a little different, some of the legends behind it may be a little different, they're essentially describing the same phenomenon for all these, you know, thousands and thousands of years across the world, and many of these cultures who never had any interaction with each other, and yet there it is.
Yeah. I've often been perplexed by it, because it seems to be something that spans cultures, religion, belief structures, Mike. There doesn't seem to be any particular starting point for this. It just seems to be something that's been with us for millennia. And it's often curious when you come across a phenomenon such as this that it does seem to have such a big span.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can go back into ancient Sumeria and see, you know, some of their different stories and reports of this type of phenomenon. And essentially with them, they called it a demon. They had different names. And, you know, we have a different connotation these days as to what a demon is. But back then, you had good demons and bad demons and kind of in between demons. So that was just kind of like a catch-all term. And then they had different descriptions for each of their various demons. But they had some that, you know, took on the properties of shadow people or the old hag. You look at ancient Egypt, and they had seven parts to the soul, and one of those, the kebit, was the shadow part of the soul, which basically remained here on earth after a person went on into the afterlife. And you also see that, you know, here in America, some of the different Native American cultures, where they also had a similar concept as the Egyptians, but not as many parts to the soul. They, like the Choctaw, talked about having two parts of the soul. And again, one of them being the shadow that remained here on earth. And that one actually gets a little interesting, because that shadow can also take on the form of different animals. So you start getting some of these other properties mixed in there as well. So very, very interesting. But yes, all these cultures for basically all time.
I mean, is it obviously in your work as an investigator, and the fact that you've gone out and you've investigated a lot of different kind of cases over your career so far, Mike, have you noticed a trend in a particular type of shadow person phenomenon, as in which one is more common, or do you think that there is such a wide spectrum of these events? Because I, you know, in my personal experience and what I've seen and what I've read, you know, the Hat Man is obviously one that seems to be quite in the paranormal zeitgeist as we speak at the moment, with numerous films. But I've, you know, and obviously I've touched on, a lot of people refer to what's called the hag, but then there's also the tall man, or there seems to be things that creep and crawl around bedrooms and around closet doors. So do you think that there seems to be one particular one that seems to be more prevalent, or is it just such a wide variety that you can't sort of say one is more, I wouldn't say popular, because I don't think it's something that people would wish to invite
more
to.
Common.
Yeah, one that's more common than others might.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to answer, because, you know, it's not like we can really take a shadow person census, you know. But, you know, here we're going through a census this year in America, and we don't have the shadow people, you know, checking the box saying, yeah, I live in Ohio or whatever. But of all the reports that I've collected over the years and the stories that I've read and, you know, people that have talked to me, it seems the most common would be just your basic, you know, shadow figure standing in the room or walking down the hall or what have you. Yeah, the Hat Man has gotten a lot of traction here lately. The crawlers have as well, because they're more sensational. You know, these are, just talking about a figure standing in the corner of the room isn't spicy. It's not enticing. Where, you know, you talk about, you know, the Hat Man coming into the room, you know, striking this fear into you, or the, you know, crawler, you know, running around the walls or the ceiling. That's a lot more exciting. And so you're hearing a lot more of these reports come forward, or they're becoming more popular through our media. But still, you know, like the crawler, I only have a handful of stories. I've only ever had one experience with the crawler myself. I actually have never seen the Hat Man, even though I've seen – I can't even count the number of shadow people I've seen over my life, but I've still never actually seen the Hat Man. You know, but those stories seem to be coming out of the woodwork a lot more these days. And people ask me, why are there more sightings of crawlers or the Hat Man these days? And really, when it comes to paranormal activity in general, I think people are a lot more comfortable coming forward now and telling their stories, because the paranormal is a lot more mainstream. And over the last, you know, 25 years, you've had, you know, these various television shows and other people coming forth and telling their stories. So now that actually helps people to come forth and tell their own stories. It's just, yeah, with things like the Hat Man and the crawler, those are a little spicier.
It is very interesting as well, because I think often we can often consider that these things are quite negative in the way that they tend to sort of bring themselves forwards to people, because it's often people report these experiences at night or whilst they're in bed, Mike, usually on their own as well. It's very rare that you will hear a report of someone who's in bed with a partner, for example, and has an experience. Not that there aren't such cases, because I've certainly heard of a few where people have reported awakening, you know, as a couple, and one of them has had this terrifying experience. So that's often something that's very interesting in regards to how this phenomenon brings itself forward, because it does seem to tend to be something that occurs at night.
Yeah, a lot of times it does tend to happen at night. That doesn't mean it's exclusive. Mm-hmm. There are shadow people occurrences that happen during the day. I've seen them during the day, and I do have other reports from people where they've experienced during the day. But yeah, it does seem to happen more often at night, and maybe that's because it's a little bit easier for the shadows to be able to hide at night in that type of environment. But you mentioned that it's a little bit more rare for a partner to be there when this happens. And it's really fascinating to me when that does happen, because it's corroborating evidence to me if you have a partner actually observing what has happened. For instance, I have a couple of interesting stories within the book, Walk in the Shadows, in which the girlfriend was asleep in bed. She was starting to experience sleep paralysis, and it was the boyfriend who had actually woken up and saw the shadow right there by her bed. So it's two different people experiencing this phenomenon. And another one that's related to the old hag syndrome, in which the woman was, you could say it was sleep paralysis, but basically she had woken up, and instead of an old hag sitting on her chest, it was a dire wolf that was actually on her chest. And when her husband woke up, he, you know, saw that his wife was, you know, going through something traumatic. He couldn't actually see the dire wolf, but what he saw was the impressions from the paw prints on her shoulders. And so he got up and turned on the light, and then everything stopped happening. So it's very interesting how these things can still manifest with others there as a witness.
I mean, I'm someone that, thankfully, I've only experienced sleep paralysis once, Mike, and it happened 25 years ago, and I still remember it. It was a very unnerving experience, and it happened as I was waking up on a morning. And I'm often surprised that some people just don't seem to have any comprehension about sleep paralysis or the effect it can have, because it is a very, very scary experience if you've never had it. I'm very fortunate, or maybe not so, it depends on your personal opinion, to have only had it occur the once. And it really was something that shocked me at the time. It probably lasted 30 seconds, but it seemed to last a lot longer than that, as things do when you're in a little bit of a panic. In regards to this, I think often people just dismiss it as sleep paralysis, Mike, but I'm always interested in people that clearly aren't having a sleep paralysis experience because they're able to respond or turn a light on or something like that. Do you think it's a misnomer that people just put it down to sleep paralysis? Because I don't think sleep paralysis explains quite a lot of it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my problems I have with the medical community here. And like you, I've also had bouts of sleep paralysis. It's happened to me twice, and neither one of those times did I experience a shadow person. And all the times that I did experience a shadow person, I was, you know, fully awake, usually walking around, and all of a sudden I see the thing dart across the room or something like that. Or the crawler incident, we were actually doing an investigation in the basement of an old church. The closest one would be that very first time where I did wake up. But if you recognize from that story, you know, I certainly wasn't experiencing sleep paralysis. My mouth opened up, my arms crossed across my body. When I watched the thing go down the hall, my head had to turn to watch it go down the hallway. So I was not paralyzed. So, yeah, I do believe it's a massive misnomer that an injustice that the medical community has done. You know, sleep paralysis is a real biological phenomenon. It is something that our body does while we're asleep so that we don't act out our dreams. So it's completely natural and biological. Shadow people are another phenomenon. They just happen to sometimes happen at the same time. There are certainly people that wake up, they're experiencing sleep paralysis, and there does also happen to be a shadow person in their room. And I think what happens, you know, during these cases is the way I try to describe it, anybody who's had children will recognize this, that in the middle of the night when you're, you know, say your child's had a bad dream or whatever, and they come up to the bed. My kids were notorious for this. They would not at first like tap me on the shoulder or say dad or whatever. They would just stand there by the bed. I'd kind of wake up and go, oh, hey, you know, Cameron, what are you doing? And you know, so basically I felt their presence near me. I felt their energy near me. And I think what's happening is that in these cases with shadow people, we are feeling their energy in the room. We're feeling their presence in the room, and our body wakes up and happens to go through this sleep paralysis at that particular time, not because of the shadow person, but because it's a natural biological thing. We've been woken up out of our sleep, but it's this thing that actually woke us. You know, I also use another example with this, that, you know, I dream about all kinds of different things. You know, the medical community will say that, you know, the shadow person is a hallucination from your dream. You're still like in this quasi dream state as you're waking up. But, you know, I dream about all kinds of different things, you know, not just people. You know, I dream about, you know, there's trees in my dream, there's cars, there's airplanes. I've had dreams of being on stage with Motley Crue, and I've never woken up and have an entire, you know, audience in my room and the pyrotechnics and the drum kit and the guitars, and that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's never happened. So yeah, I can't buy that this is just a hallucination for every single person. It happens to be that we're hallucinating a person. I believe that the sleep paralysis, shadow people, they are two phenomenon, separate phenomenon that happen. They just sometimes happen at the same time.
Yeah, and obviously, if we're having more than one person having an experience, Mike, that kind of negates that anyway, because as far as I'm aware, hallucinations aren't shared, regardless of I've seen people dismissed in a variety of phenomenon as a shared hallucination. I've yet to see anything scientifically that can conclusively say that that's possible, especially when you both wake up. I'm not sure how either of you, without communicating, can have the same experience.
Exactly, yeah. I agree with you there. Yeah, these, and those are some of the more significant reports that I've collected, are those that are experiencing this thing together, and even in slightly different ways. You know, one person, like I said, the one person was having the sleep paralysis, the other was seeing the shadow, and then that direwolf incident. You know, those two really stand out in my mind. And another one that was really interesting to me was three girls, and it was a half man incident, actually a recurring incident where the three girls were sharing the same bedroom, and many nights a hat person would walk into the room and would stand at the foot of the one girl's bed and just stare at her. And the two girls from across the room would lay there and watch this figure just stand at the foot of her bed. And this went on for years and years and years until they finally moved out of the house. Mm. So there's three people right there all experiencing the same thing from different perspectives.
Very much so. And I think that kind of opens up a couple of different avenues there. I mean, one of the things I've often been struck by is that for a lot of people that report these phenomenon, regardless of which particular entity they're encountering, Mike, one of the things that always strikes me is that there seems to be a real sort of lack of distinction in regards to facial features or actual clothing. It's as though they can see a silhouette without actually the distinct facial expression or hands or the type of clothing. They can simply see a silhouette, or mentioned there the Hat Man is a prime example, or the shape more than anything. And yet we still get occasional cases where perhaps someone sees a pair of glowing eyes, which I've often found very interesting as well, because that seems to then suggest that there's something else going on.
Yeah, the glowing eyes are a little different. Red-eyed entities are, you know, another category that we've chalked up, although there are reports of different colored eyes, blue, yellow, purple. It seems like every color of the rainbow has been reported now. Mm. But yeah, you're right. You know, you have these very vague features. It might be the silhouette or an outline of a hat. A lot of times, and there's like different style hats too. You know, some people report the, you know, like a fedora or a wide-brimmed hat. There was one that reported like an archer style hat. So a lot of different types of hats, or a top hat is another. And sometimes they may wear some accompanying clothing. And again, it's basically by the silhouette, like a trench coat or a cape or something like that. The red eyes, definitely a little bit different. Of course, everybody automatically assumes that the red eyes, you know, mean something's evil. And, you know, the one red-eyed entity case that that I'd been on, or at least the one significant one that I'd been on, you know, that one was certainly a evil, malevolent entity. Whether that had to do with the red eyes or not, you could make that assessment. But, yeah, I've also heard cases with red-eyed entities of, again, kind of just standing there and staring. One particular case where, you know, this woman was getting up from the computer in her living room, and she looks out the window, and there's this tall, dark, red-eyed shadow person standing outside her bay window. And she would keep walking toward her kitchen, turn, look, it'd still stand there, and keep walking, turn, look, it would still be standing there. And she did that like four times until the thing finally went away. So not really, you can't say that was really evil, but it was certainly creepy.
Mm. I mean, that is the thing that always interests me as well, because as far as I'm aware, the majority of cases I've come across, Mike, there is no communication. So it's often the person's impression of this figure or entity or shape seems to give a negative connotation that makes people react to them in such a way. Why do you think that is? Because, you know, just because something stood there doesn't necessarily mean that it's there with bad intentions.
Right. And that's another misnomer, is that all of these things are evil. They're not all evil. And it's, you know, kind of a tragedy that there are a number of people out there these days that are proliferating that well, it's a shadow person, it must be evil. No. You know, some of these people are human spirits, and, you know, they're just like you and me. They can't fully manifest as an apparition, and they're only able to come across as a shadow. Well, that's certainly not evil. You know, somebody's Aunt Mary, or, you know, somebody's grandmother or whatever, that is only manifesting as a shadow, that's not evil. That's just the way they end up, you know, coming across. And yeah, these ones that are just standing there in the corner, or standing there at the end of the bed, it is certainly creepy, but they're not necessarily doing any harm or doing anything evil, you know. And it's I understand why people believe that. You know, we fear what we don't understand. Many times this is happening in the middle of the night. It's certainly an invasion of our space and of our privacy. So that strikes a fear into us. You know, like I was talking about that incident when I was 8 years old. You know, I was certainly frightened out of my mind. And if you had asked me back then if I thought it was something evil, I probably would have said yes. Looking back on it, I can't necessarily say that it was doing anything evil, even though it did have a physical interaction with me. I've talked about this with a number of people since then, of course, now as an adult. And there are some that suggest that, you know, it may have thought that for whatever reason, it may have thought that I was dead and was putting me in some sort of burial pose. And a lot of the ideas people were coming up with were like the idea of the old Egyptian sarcophagi that had the crook and the flail and the crossing of the arms like that. And so it's like, okay, that's an interesting idea. And if that is the case, then it would actually be doing something to honor me and not to, you know, frighten me out of my mind or do anything evil. Of course, it's still unknown what it was truly doing. But from that perspective, okay, that's not actually evil now. That's a little bit different. And I think we're misinterpreting the intentions of a lot of these things. Sure, there are ones that certainly are evil, that are malevolent, that are up to nasty things. I'm not saying that there aren't. I think shadow people are like people. There are some good shadow people and some bad shadow people, just like there are some good people and some bad people, which may sound overly simplistic, but I believe that's the case.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's one of those things, because I think the interpretation is all down to how you view this situation, because for all we know, these could be departed loved ones or whatever, or whatever we want to kind of consider them to be, Mike. For all we know, they could be coming to check on us to make sure that we're okay. And just because, do you think it's because there's no communication and they're quite ambivalent in being able to discern what you're actually seeing, that tends to sort of drift towards the negative response to it, whereas for all intents and purposes they could be there for positive means?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, it basically comes down to the interpretation of the person laying there in bed, or you know, whatever the situation may be. And I think a lot of times, yeah, it very well could be, you know, a loved one coming in to check on somebody, and they may not even realize that they're coming off as a shadow. They may not even be trying to manifest at all. It's just their energy standing there in the corner of the room, and that's just the way that the person laying in bed or on the couch or whatever happens to perceive them. And there's a lot of other different ideas too as to who or what these things could be and why they're standing in the corner watching, whether it's an interdimensional being that's coming to study us. Some people have postulated they could be extraterrestrials doing basically the same thing, watching and learning. So there's a lot of different things that could be going on here. There's even the ideal of, you know, not, you know, a loved one, but not necessarily from the afterlife. There are many people that know how to astral project, and if you've astral projected yourself into, you know, the room of a loved one, let's say, you know, you're a mother and you have an adult daughter or son that has grandchildren, and you know how to astral project, but they live, you know, 1,000 miles away, you may decide to go astral project one night and visit. And, you know, how do we know how your energy is perceived within their house? Maybe you're coming off as a shadow with your astral projection.
Yeah, it may simply be someone wanting to come and watch over us. We may be going through times of stress or upset, Mike, and it could be an emotional response to a personal situation that is allowing this to manifest in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any one answer. I think, you know, a lot of times we as humans, we want to find that one simplistic answer and say, well, this is what shadow people are, this is what they're up to, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think it's that black and white. I think there's a lot of gray area here, and there's a lot of different varieties of shadow people, and I think that their motives are individual to each shadow person.
Yeah. I mean, as I refer to there, the majority of cases, there doesn't seem to be any kind of interaction, either vocally or mentally, Mike. But have you uncovered any cases where there's been some kind of communication?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting, because that's a question that was posed to me some years back now, and I hadn't had a lot of people come to me up to that point with cases of, you know, shadow people having communicated to them, you know, verbally or mentally. But since then, I've had a few. So it's kind of interesting how the universe works. And it's interesting, you know, so for the most part, You know, they don't communicate physically because they don't really have a voice box, so they can't, you know, open a mouth and speak. So most of the cases that I've heard are some sort of mental telepathy that that is some sort of thought transference that they're giving you. My friend Rob Guttrow had an interaction with his aunt, and basically that was all, thought transference. Of course, he's a psychic medium, so he has a little bit more going on anyway. But yeah. but she had come across into his bedroom as a shadow, and she wanted him to deliver a message to his mother. So it's cases like that where you get a little bit of thought transference. But yeah, for the most part, they're kind of like that quiet sentinel just standing in the corner.
Yes. When you've had the opportunity to come across anyone that's had some kind of communication, what's the underlying message that seems to be trying to be made, Mike?
It's been a large variety. So, some of them are inquisitive. They're trying to learn more about the person or learn more about the environment. There's again the delivery of a message, and then there has been a case in which the message was a little bit more sinister in talking about trying to basically either take possession of the house or take possession of the family, that sort of thing. Of course, given the person that came from, it may have been a little sensationalized, but you don't know. You got to take their word on what was said. So it's a variety of different messages that have been delivered.
Mm. What I've often been interested in as well, because there seems to be two particular types of this phenomenon as well in regards to either people or property, Mike. So in your experience and through your investigations, have you found that people seem to attract this, or is it as often it's the property that seems to manifest this, and regardless of who's there, these entities would appear regardless?
That's a good question. I've been asked, do shadow people attach themselves, like some other spirits might attach themselves to a person and follow them around. Mm. And that story that I was talking about before with the girls, the three girls with the hat person in the bedroom, when they moved, that hat person did not follow them. Mm. Of course, the only way to find out if the hat person stayed would be to interview the new family that moved into that house. So I don't know. It seems mostly related to the property. Hmm. That they are inhabiting this location for whatever means. The crawler that I experienced at Black Bear Church, it was attached to the property. Hmm. There are many people over the years that had actually reported that phenomenon there. We actually got to witness it one night. So that one there is to the property, and that seems to be the majority of cases. Now, when it's a human spirit, such as Rob's aunt, well, that's certainly specific to the person.
Yeah, because I mean, it is something I've come across when we're dealing with standard hauntings, Mike, that there are people that are haunted, and regardless where they go, the phenomenon tends to follow them for whatever reason. So I've often found it peculiar that some people just presume that this doesn't occur when it comes to shadow people, because we don't know what they are. I would be surprised if that didn't occur, that, if it wasn't a property as well as people.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. Mm. Yeah, again, I think it comes down to the motive of the shadow person. Again, there being different varieties and types of shadow people. If that shadow happens to be a loved one that's looking in on somebody, then, yeah, they're going to follow the loved one. But, if they're there because this is a particular location in which, maybe – if this is somebody from another dimension that's studying, or somebody, maybe it's extraterrestrial from another world that is studying, well, again, are they there to study the location, to study the land, to study, what happens inside of a household, or are they assigned to a specific family? I think it could go both ways.
Yeah, very much so. The other aspect of this that I've often been surprised to come across is when we get witnesses who report encountering more than one, either a pair or a trio. I mean, how many have you ever come across a case where someone's had, because I've seen cases where there's been a pair and even a trio. Have you had more than that appeal? You know, not that I'm suggesting, you know, as you refer to a, you know, a full concert turning up, but have we had many reports of numerous figures appearing or a number of them, more than a pair or a trio?
Yeah, that does happen, and it seems like the Hat Man is kind of the ringleader on a lot of these. You'll hear stories of like a Hat Man flanked by a couple of humanoid figures, you know, without the hats. Basically, they look the same, just one happens to be wearing a hat, which is kind of interesting. So is that, you know, signify some sort of rank or leadership, possibly? That's kind of what we interpret that as right now. And these type of trios like that, you know, a lot of people will say that these are energy vampires, that they'll instill fear into the person. Of course, again, usually in bed, and will feed off of that energy. Mm. Now, I have personally seen you talked about like a concert of shadow people. I have seen that actually. It was a really an interesting incident because I was not doing anything, you know, paranormal at the time. Like I said, in recent years, the majority of times that I've seen these things are when I've been on paranormal investigations. Mm. But I was on this property, this particular piece of property, for something very personal. It had nothing to do with anything paranormal at all. It was a different mind frame. Yeah. A person that I had known had returned to their childhood home, which had been abandoned, and she had parked her SUV back behind the house. And basically I was there to kind of talk her down off a ledge. Mm. And so, you know, I parked in the side yard and went back there to talk to her, got in her SUV, and we're talking for a while. And, there's this large forest back behind this house. And as we're talking, I started noticing in the side mirror that there were these shorter shadow figures that were coming up to the trees. Mm. And I keep looking, and there's more and more of them that are starting to form up back there in the trees. It's like, okay, what's going on here? I kind of look at her, and she's like, you saw something, didn't you? And I was like, well, yeah, I did. And one of them ended up creeping up behind the SUV, and I was like, I think we need to go now. Which normally, and people ask me, you know, do you ever get scared on investigations? And, you know, my typical answer is no. Mm. You know, because I'm usually curious in nature, and if something happens, I want to know, you know, what it was, or if I see something, I'm like running after it. But in this particular case, since I was not in that frame of mind, I was just like, yeah, this is a little bit more of a nerve-wracking situation. We have this, you know, we're getting ganged up on back here, so we should probably go. And what was interesting is, as I walked out of her SUV to go ahead over to my car, I didn't see the shadow that had approached her vehicle, but I'd seen all of them back there in the trees, and there were a lot of them. I couldn't even fathom a guess as to how many there were. Hmm. But what was also very interesting is up in the treetops, there was something like white and silky and kind of spiderwebby that was slinking about up in the trees. And I was like, okay, yeah, we really need to go now. So I got in my car, and the two of us left. So it was a very, very interesting situation.
I think we can call it a tactical withdrawal, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What I've often found, as we refer to in regards to people or property, if I would imagine in your investigations, I would be very surprised to hear that if you haven't been asked to kind of remove them, Mike, or cleanse an area perhaps. So is that a situation that you found yourself in? And if so, how on earth do you go around dealing with this? Because like I say, often if we work on the parameters of not knowing what these entities are, it's very difficult to kind of fall back into a particular remedy, be it a religious one or a spiritual one, such as saging or incantations or things like that. So is it a case of dealing with individual situations based through an investigation that points you in the right direction, or do you just basically think, well, let's try something and see what works?
Well, I've been asked to do that before, and we've done that. I don't go into a location and say, okay, I'm gonna cleanse this place. That's not what I do. I will really only do that if asked, and if the situation really warrants it. The one that was most widely known, or you know, that was actually televised, was the Monster in the Closet case from Animal Planet, from the show The Haunted.
Yes.
And that one had to do with a red-eyed shadow entity, which I'd mentioned before. It was certainly a malevolent entity. We ended up classifying that one as a demon. People will ask me, are these things demonic? And it's like, well, it's rarely ever a demon, but it can be. I mean, throughout all the years that I've been doing this, that is the one demon case. Demons are not as prevalent as people think. That's, you know, the media and television trying to say that everything's a demon. Not everything is a demon. Just because something falls off your mantle does not mean you have a demon. I've had that. You know, people contact me. I have a demon. Well, why do you think, you know, you have a demon? Well, you know, this candle was thrown off the mantle. Okay. You know, that's not a demon. We don't know yet. I mean, it could be, but it takes a while to get there. Yes. And you know, with that particular case that was filmed for The Haunted, you know, and they only have so much time to tell a story. And I understand that, you know, they basically made it look like that the family was having all kinds of problems. We went in, we investigated one time, determined that it was a demon. And all of a sudden we call in a demonologist, Carl Johnson, to exorcise the demon out of the house. It was a lot more than that. So we had been there. We had performed at least a half dozen paranormal investigations of the house, had constant contact with the family, all kinds of research that we'd done performed. There were also little times in between that we'd go and visit, you know, for a few minutes here and there between investigations. So we had a lot of interaction with the family over several months. Mm-hmm. And over that time, you know, we were trying to determine what exactly this thing was. Was it human or was it something else? And so, you know, because demons are a lot more rare than people think, we had first gone down the route of determining whether or not this was a human spirit. You know, the house had a lot of bad history with suicides and attempted suicides. The girl that was now having these problems there was also contemplating that herself. Mm. So, you know, we went down the route of determining whether or not it was one of these people that had killed themselves in that house. And once we had eliminated that from our investigations, we started thinking, okay, maybe this is something else. And just watching what was happening to her, you know, Taliesin, the girl, she herself was oppressed. The entire family was really oppressed, but she herself most particularly. And then she started exhibiting signs of borderline possession. And that's when we got Carl Johnson, a renowned demonologist, involved. And when he came out, that's when we performed the blessing of the house. The family wanted the cleansing done, and that was the big you know, television play of that. And that was an extremely wild night. They couldn't even put all of that on film. There were so many different things that happened throughout that, but we did get that out of there. And the family today you know, is still doing very well. We've been in contact with them. I was in contact with them for a couple years after the fact until I moved out of the area. And then Carl just recently here had contacted them, and they're still doing very well.
That is interesting, because I've seen that particular program, Mike. And one of the things that I often put a lot of faith in is the response of animals to a phenomenon. Now, if I'm correct, I believe did Alison have a cat?
Yeah, Taliesin had – well, she actually had a couple of cats, but they featured the one, yes. Jasmine. yeah, there are two cats. But, yeah, what was interesting about that, The Haunted, because it was on Animal Planet, they were supposed to gear the show more toward the cats. Mm. And they talked about one of her older cats earlier in the show, and then they didn't show the cats again really until like the very end, when we had pushed the entity out of the house and the wind kicked up in the backyards and the cats are circling us. They're showing the cats then, but there's a deleted scene that was on the DVD that they gave the family that didn't make it onto the actual airing of the show. And the family was kind enough to give me a copy of the DVD. So in a lot of my, you know, presentations and videos that I do online, I'll show that clip because it's interesting, because it does show Jasmine the cat, you know, interacting to something going on in the house. And we didn't know what it was at first, but, you know, she's basically flitting about from the living room to the little dinette area to the kitchen. And then she wandered over by the bedrooms and stopped dead in her tracks right by the door to Taliesin's bedroom. And I'm following the cat, and I look up, and I have the camera in my hand, and I suddenly look up, and there's this dark mass in the middle of Taliesin's bedroom. The cat kind of takes off around the corner of the wall back into the living room area. I tried taking a photo, which didn't come out, because basically I obliterated the shadow mass with my flash. I was like, oh yeah, I shouldn't have used a flash there. But, you know, it was really interesting because in that moment you kind of felt everything get really, really heavy. It's like, oh, this is why the cat is real skittish right now. And the black mass just kind of slowly dissipated away and was gone. So, you know, people will ask, well, was that, you know, the red-eyed entity trying to form? And, you know, I don't know, possibly, you know, maybe it was taking a different form and couldn't quite coalesce into that, into the figure with the red eyes. But it was certainly dark and heavy, and it basically looked like a black cloud in the middle of her room.
Yeah. I mean, the mist apparitions are very interesting as well, because it's often difficult to kind of pin them down as to, is it something that's trying to manifest itself, Mike, or is that just as good as it can get?
Well, you know, I've actually seen, I think they are trying to manifest into something. I say that, but, you know, again, I can't be all inclusive here.
Yeah.
Because that one, of course, just dissipated away. Talking with Carl Johnson and his experiences at the Conjuring House, we just did some filming there a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, he didn't see the shadow smoke that he saw there form up in anything. He says it looked like, you know, something was on fire and the smoke was coming down the hall. But I have actually seen that shadow smoke form up into an apparition. It was really, really interesting. Happened about a year and a half ago at Mineral Springs Hotel in Alton, Illinois. We're doing a paranormal investigation that was basically kind of the end to our Haunted Road Media Paracon that we had done that day. And there's just a handful of us left, and we're in the upstairs abandoned part of the old hotel. And we're in the quarter penthouse suite, I guess, for lack of a better term, of the hotel, which did have a confirmed suicide. Pearl is known to haunt there. We've gotten some interesting interactions with her up there before. So we're doing some EVP work in that room, and we hear, you know, some tapping coming from down the hall, some noises down the hall. So we go out there and taking a look, and from the end of the hall, you can see this smoke that's starting to billow up, and it's coming closer and coming closer. And it's like, okay, you know, you guys see the smoke? And all of a sudden it starts to creep up the right-hand side of the wall, and then it would creep back down and creep back up. It was really interesting. It's coming closer as it keeps doing this. And all of a sudden, as it creeps back up that right-hand wall, it actually formed up into the apparition of a little girl. And we're trying to coax her closer. You know, come on, it's okay. You know, we're friends here. And what was interesting is down that hall in one of the rooms is the story of a little girl who's supposed to haunt there. And we had done work in that room before, never really gotten anything. So we just kind of was like, it might just be a story. But there, you know, psychic mediums had been in there and picked up on her energy. And for one of my anthologies, Encounters with the Paranormal, I had one of those mediums write a story about what they'd picked up about her, and an artist friend of mine, Adam Tillery, had drawn a fantastic illustration of her by the window in that room. Well, what was really interesting was this girl that was coming down the hall looked almost exactly what Adam had drawn for that book about a year beforehand, and she ended up stopping at that doorway of the room where people had said that they had experienced the little girl before. And she wouldn't go any further than that. You know, we're trying to coax her forward, and she wouldn't go any further than that room. So that was really, really interesting. But there, you know, shadow smoke into the apparition of a little girl. So, yeah, a lot of times these shadow entities are just human spirits. And that one, I mean, you're not going to tell me that the little girl's evil. Come on.
I mean, it is interesting as well, because this aspect of the paranormal, I've often been surprised at, because when I first got into this as a young child and read numerous books about ghosts and things. Smoky apparitions, or what appeared to be misty, smoky, whatever you want to sort of label it as, seem to be far more common than they are these days, or certainly reported more, Mike. And I know it's something that's, you know, as part of the paranormal phenomenon, it's something that's been with us since the written word in regards to ghosts and the paranormal, because I know there are certainly some stories that go back to Greek, you know, ancient Greek times where...
Yeah, the Greek shades.
Yeah, exactly. What I've often found interesting is that they don't seem to be that common these days, and yet we still get occasional reports of misty figures, which for me seems to be something quite similar.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, it comes down to that what's spicy.
Yes.
You know, reporting a shadow mist or whatever isn't as enticing these days as reporting the shadow, the hat man or the crawler or something like that. And, you know, a lot of paranormal investigators, when they go on investigations, I mean, they'll see those sorts of things. They'll see, you know, a shadow run down the hall, or they'll be like, oh, I see some shadow playing the corner, you know, but it doesn't get, you know, hyped up as much as anything else, because, you know, a lot of times, I mean, people are trying to, you know, film something for, you know, whether it's YouTube or, you know, they're actually trying to pitch something to a production company, again, a television show or what have you, you know, trying to say, oh, you know, I see a little shadow playing in the corner. That doesn't sell as well as, oh, there, you know, there's the hat man or what have you. So I don't think they get reported as much, but I think they still happen just as often.
Yeah. I mean, there's one aspect that I've not certainly come across one as well, and I've often found this quite interesting as well, because has there been any reports of shadow people where there's been an aroma, Mike, like a scent or a smell that accompanies their appearance or sort of appears before the apparition turns up?
You know, it happens on occasion, but not as often as you would think. You know, I've had that question. Well, you know, do you smell sulfur or what have you? You know, yeah. Of course, we're trying to go down the demon route with that. And so, well, you know, no, not usually. You know, on occasion, and people may report like a pungent smell or something musty or what have you. It's like, well, you're in a basement, so, you know.
Yeah, she should be musty, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Because I think that's quite interesting whenever, you know, there are certain hauntings, especially, you know, there are numerous poltergeist cases where there is an aroma that tends to precede an occurrences happening. So I've often found that doesn't, it just doesn't seem to be something, like I say, these experiences seem to be purely visual more than anything, don't they?
Yeah, for the most part, there's you don't really get too many smells associated with them. There's nothing really, you know, auditory. They move very silently. You know, what is interesting is, you know, so one of my more interesting experiences did have an audio component to it, but it was such an unusual experience with this particular shadow, and this is, you know, one of the foremost incidents that I tend to say a kind of quote-unquote true shadow person is an interdimensional being, because in this particular incident, we were doing an investigation at a restaurant called Johnny V's. This was in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and the investigation was just winding down. I was kind of on my own, headed toward the kitchen. A couple guys were up in the bar area. A couple of others were out front in the restaurant area. And I was just doing a last photo sweep of the restaurant. So I walk in through the main double doors. I think it was a double door. It was one large door of the kitchen. And this shadow wisp, I mean, it was just really fast. It was very translucent, but you could definitely tell it was there. And it just starts right across the kitchen. Like, I scared it. And boom, it slammed into this little swinging metal door on the side of the kitchen that, you know, it's very light, very flimsy, basically made for waiters and waitresses to carry large trays of food through so that they don't really have, you know, any give, but, yeah, you know, they're able to walk through it. You hear, boom, that slam of the door, but the door didn't move at all. And I called out to the others, hey, you know, did you guys hear that? And they're like, yeah, we heard that. And I told them what happened. And for a moment, I thought that they were messing with me, that, okay, somebody must have, like, thrown something at the door. And I am asking that. Did you guys throw something back here? No. I even walk out that door. I'm looking at the ground, looking around. You know, is there something? They had to have thrown something. But and they hadn't. And even if they had, it was such a flimsy door that the door would have moved. So it's okay. They didn't throw anything at the door. So basically what I think happened here was that I had, for a brief moment, experienced something or seen something on another plane of existence or from another dimension, and it may have seen me that way. So when I walked in through that main kitchen door, you know, it may have seen me as a shadow, it may have seen me as a ghost, I don't know, but I certainly scared it because it ran and it took off. But perhaps on its plane of existence, you know, it actually opened that door and it blew right through it. But with sound working on a different wavelength, I was able to hear that sound come through from that other dimension or that other plane of existence into our plane of existence. So that was one to me where the shadow person, who knows what it was on its plane of existence, actually made a sound, and that was not of itself but of the door.
Is that something that you've come across in any other cases? Where, because I've often found one of the things that strikes me about the shadow person experience, Mike, is that there doesn't seem to be any kind of secondary responses, such as objects being moved or people who claim to live in haunted houses and get disturbed in their sleep will claim that sometimes the bedding is pulled off them or pillows are moved and things like that, or they can hear things walking about. And the thing with the shadow person phenomenon is it seems to be, in the most part, I mean, please correct me if my interpretation is incorrect, there doesn't seem to be any kind of noises, you know, there's no kind of footsteps or doors creaking or objects being moved about.
Yeah, a sound like that is really the exception rather than the norm. You know, kind of like what I was saying earlier, they're kind of like that silent sentinel standing in the corner or maybe walking down the hall or what have you. Even when we had the crawler incident back at that church, you know, the thing is circling us on the ceiling, along the walls, and you're just seeing like kind of this flurry of arms and legs. You know, but it wasn't making a whole lot of sound. The only sound it really made was two things. One, it knocked a bottle across the floor, and the other, it hit this metal railing, or maybe it, you know, it may have even kicked a rock into the metal railing. I don't know. But it's really interesting because we didn't hear it, but we heard, you know, two small objects that it seems to have interacted with. And, you know, same thing with that door. So, it is very interesting because you don't really hear their movement, but occasionally they may bump into something or interact with something in our physical world that does make a sound.
It is, yeah, because that kind of gives credence to this experience being sort of immune to its surroundings. You know, as we say, that these sightings seem to occur, and it just seems to be a very singular experience, Mike. There doesn't seem to be many parallels with other parts of the paranormal, like I say, because as we touched on about Jasmine the cat, there aren't many reports where we have people claiming that their animals seem to have a response to this either.
Well, the animals do. I mean, they tend to be able to pick up on these things more often than humans. So, you know, Jasmine having that interaction, you know, that really showed us that something was going on, and lo and behold, okay, yes, there was something going on. It would have been interesting to see what was going on in that room, you know, before you know, I followed Jasmine, if somebody had actually been in there. I guess I'll say this. You know, I don't usually have pets along with me on investigations, so it's a little bit hard to know. You have to go by a lot of times you're going by what a homeowner with a pet may be saying. And, you know, a lot of times they will say, well, you know, they're meowing at something, like at the wall, or yeah, the dog is barking at the wall and there's nothing there. But in that case, what they're telling us is, well, there's nothing there. So that's not a shadow person incident. It's something else that's going on. So for me to assess, and I do talk about shadow animals, which are completely different. That is the shadow entity itself being an animal.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as the animals reacting, yeah, Jasmine was probably my one singular one, at least I can think off the top of my head, that I've really experienced an animal reacting to the shadow.
Yeah, it is something that I've noticed, because I've heard lots of people claim to have these experiences. Not that I'm dismissing them at all, Mike. And the one thing that's always struck me is there never seems to be anybody that says they're at the, you know, their dog barks or their cat jumps off the bed as it's happening or anything. It's not that I'm suggesting that shadow people only seem to be attracted to people who don't have pets. but it is something that struck me, because primarily animal responses to paranormal phenomena are something I've often put a lot of credence in, as you touched on, because they tend to sense things in you know, on different levels than we do, be it sight, sound, whatever, smell, because obviously their senses are more heightened than ours perhaps are in those realms. And that's a very interesting aspect that you touched on there, because that's something I didn't really kind of consider. But do you come across many cases where the entity is an animal or an animal shape? And if so, is there a preference to is it, you know, is it a dog shape? Is it a cat shape? Or is it just something that looks like it's on four legs?
That's a good question. And there's a variety of different shadow animals or reports of shadow animals. I've seen what I would call a shadow cat at cemeteries, most particularly Dick Duck Cemetery in Oklahoma. I don't know if that just I don't know if that's the residence of this particular shadow cat or what have you, or you know, it could be, you know, that old Egyptian belief of, you know, cats being guardians of the dead, that sort of thing. But I've heard reports of shadow spiders. There's a pretty extensive short story about shadow spiders in the book A Walk in the Shadows. You know, shadow snakes, sure, shadow dogs. So there's a variety of these different types of animals that have taken a shape. There's also, again, I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, the Native American beliefs of that part of the soul that becomes a shadow after death and can actually take on the form of different animals. And there you kind of have the gamut of a variety of different animals that they could take the shape of. But yeah, these entities can take the form of different animals, and they may actually just be the spirits of animals. They may be somebody's familiar. It's really a more obscure area of this study so far.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things as well, because ghost animals are something that I've always been really interested in all my life, as long as I've loved the paranormal. And I think, especially when it comes to things like cats, because cats are very independent creatures, it's very odd to kind of pin them down, because I've spoken to a few people over the years who didn't realise what they were seeing wasn't actually a physical cat. It was only when they realised. I had one particular friend who had bought a new property and just presumed it was a cat that kept coming to his, you know, the previous owner's house, until one particular day he saw it and he knew for a fact there was no way that animal could have got in the house at all. And then he realised, yeah, that's not a real cat. So yeah, things like that I've often found very interesting. So I find that quite unique in regards to this phenomenon, that we do get reports of animals appearing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mentioned him before, my friend Rob Guttrow. He does a lot of work he does animal rescue, and he has a couple of books out right now, Pets in the Afterlife, which really delves deep into, you know, pets after they've passed, and you know, they still come around you in the afterlife, and interesting concepts of, you know, because a lot of people will take on a new pet after one has passed away, and you know, the old pet coming back to almost like train the new pet to, you know, this is what your owner is going to like. So a lot of interesting concepts there. He doesn't really get into, you know, the shadow aspect of, or shadow animals or what have you. His more on, you know, kind of on the lighter side and the more, you know, spiritual in nature, I suppose. Yeah, when it comes to actual, you know, shadow animals, it seems to be a little bit of a different realm, and, you know, whether or not perhaps some of these different shadow shadow entities are taking on that form of these different animals and aren't really those animals at all.
Why not? If they're coming in a variety of humanoid shapes, what's to say that they can't manifest in an animal type shape? I suppose it opens up all kinds of parameters of what this perplexing phenomenon could actually be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, take on the form of another, I guess, another creature here on Earth and, you know, experience the world from that perspective. Or maybe it's just easier, or, you know, maybe they believe they're not going to be observed as well if they are, you know, crawling around as a shadow cat rather than a, you know, human figure. I don't know. I mean, we can speculate all day as to why that might be.
What would you say in your experience or your investigations, Mike, is probably the most worrying case you've come across in regards to this phenomenon and how it affected the person it was pestering?
Well, I mean, that would certainly have been the case there with Taliesin in Edmond, Oklahoma. That one was really the most significant, since that was actually the demonic case that I've dealt with in my career. You know, normally most shadow person cases that have been brought to me are really just, you know, they're standing in the corner or they're standing at the edge of the bed. And yeah, they're striking fear into the person. And so it's a matter of coming down to, okay, are they actually, you know, doing something like what we've talked about with energy vampires. Are they really, you know, actually extracting that energy from a person and feeding off of that energy? Or is it just, you know, there's a phenomenon going on in this room? Of course, yes, it's very creepy. It's, you know, an invasion of somebody's space, but are they truly doing something to traumatize the person? You know, that's a lot of times what it ends up, you're trying to figure out, you know, whether that whole thing, is this thing good or is it evil?
Absolutely. Have you found that since you released the book that you've had more stories and experiences come to you via your website or your, you know, when you've done your personal appearances, Mike? Is it something that seems to be gaining traction?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, since the book has been out, I've received all kinds of emails about shadow phenomena and experiences people have had, all of that. And I was getting a lot of that at, you know, the conferences that I speak at, which, you know, a number of those stories made it into my book, because a number of those, you know, reported experiences are extremely interesting. And they really go to show how there is such a large variety of different types of shadow people and different type of experiences that are out there. And it makes it, you know, for those that want to be able to simplify this and classify shadow people into one particular category or one particular type of phenomena, it's just, I mean, it's really impossible to do. There's just so much out there.
Absolutely. No doubt I would suspect that they're probably, are you considering a second volume due to these reports that have come into you?
Well, there's definitely much more to cover, and I have left the book open. I kind of explained it in the introduction that this is really a living document, and there'll be certainly a second edition somewhere down the road, talking about, you know, other topics and, you know, adding some more of those stories and cases in there. I'm working on some other projects right now. Basically, this is really the tip of the iceberg. So I'm working on something right now called, you know, The Shadow Dimension, which, you know, it's kind of twofold. One, there's a book that I'm in the middle of putting out on that, which gets into a lot of the different concepts between, you know, interdimensional beings, multi-dimensions, and, you know, what I call a true shadow person really is. And, you know, then there's the video series that I'm in the middle of putting together that I was filming in part a couple of weeks ago out at the Conjuring House with Carl Johnson. There's other locations that we're going to be going and really tracking down some of these shadow entities and trying to determine what some of these entities may really be.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, certainly, because I think you've released 11 books so far, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, 11.
Yeah, keep yourself extremely busy with Haunted Road Media as well, because your YouTube channel is a phenomenal series of resources, Mike. It's a fantastic YouTube channel.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, we have over 700 videos out there right now. I try to put something out there weekly, although it's been, you know, 2 weeks now since I put something out. Just been very busy lately with the different projects that I'm working on. But there's, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Haunted Road Media YouTube channel has a lot of great information out there as far as different types of entities and hauntings and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah, fantastic. So thank you for your insights into this perplexing and perturbing phenomenon. Because I, you know, like I say, over the my interest in the paranormal, some of these stories are quite disturbing, the experiences that people go through, Mike. And like I say, it is a subject that I've been asked to dive into, and I couldn't think of anybody better to help me discuss this. So thank you for your conversation and your input. So where can everybody keep up to date with your work and your YouTube channel and get hold of a copy of the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can check me out at MikeRicksecker.com or HauntedRoadMedia.com, where you can find copies of the book there, A Walk in the Shadows, or also, of course, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those great places. I do have a workshop coming out called Unveiling the Shadows, which delves really, really deep into shadow phenomena. It's a two-hour workshop on October 24th, so limited spots available. So I do encourage people, of course, to sign up for that. And I'll probably do it again sometime down the road. This is actually the first time I'm opening up this workshop, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. So yeah, you can find me in a multitude of places. Also, the Haunted Road Media YouTube channel, and then the Edge of the Rabbit Hole YouTube channel, where we do a couple of different shows just like this where we interview different people.
Fantastic. Ah, brilliant. Well, I will certainly make sure I cover everything in the show notes. And lastly, before I let you leave, what you got planned for Halloween?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. We'll be handing out candy here. It's my father's birthday, actually, on Halloween, so we'll probably be doing something for him.
Oh, well, fantastic. I hope you have a great time, all of you. And like I say, thank you so much for your time today, Mike. It's been a real pleasure. You're someone I've been aware of for quite a while, so I'm delighted to finally get the chance to have you on the show. And I wish you all the very best with your continued endeavours.
Thanks, you too, Paul. I really do appreciate it.